Welcome to the podcast series from the specialists at Penn Medicine. I'm Melanie Cole, and joining me today is Dr. Scott Kasner. He's the Vice Chair for Clinical Affairs and Neurology, the Ruth M. and Tristram C. Colquitt President's Distinguished Professor of Neurology at Penn Medicine, and he's here to highlight the SELECT-2 thrombectomy study. Dr. Kasner, it's a pleasure to have you join us today. I'd like you to start by walking us through the SELECT-2 study. How did it come about? What was the goal of the trial? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, thank you very much for having me here. I'm really excited to talk about this study. The goal of the SELECT-2 trial was to determine if we could expand the indications for thrombectomy to a broader population of stroke patients. When thrombectomy was first really established as a therapy for stroke in about 2014, we used to only treat people who could be treated within 6 hours after the onset of their stroke. In 2017, two big studies called DIFFUSE-3, which Penn participated in, and DAWN, showed that we could treat selected patients up until 24 hours. In both of these trials, the imaging criteria were really critical in that we would only treat patients who had really very little evidence of damage on their initial scans and or a very large penumbra. And by this, I mean we would look at the initial CAT scan, we'd make sure that there was a really small area of hypodensity, and then ideally in some of these trials used advanced CT imaging with CT perfusion to show that there was a large territory, larger than the area that was damaged, that was penumbra, that was at risk, and that we could potentially treat that. And after that, we expanded our thrombectomy indications to 24 hours. We could treat potentially 15-ish percent of the patients in the U.S. with this therapy, but there were lots and lots of patients who just arrived in the hospital with really extensive damage, and we said we can't treat them. There's no benefit, and we can only cause harm. SELECT-2 sought to really evaluate that question a little bit more and said, rather than assuming that these patients are too far gone, maybe we could create some benefit. Such the trial was born. It was led by Amru Siraj at University of Texas in Houston, and there were 31 sites around the world that participated. We were a critical component of that, enrolled a large number of patients. And the criteria here were that these were patients who presented with an acute stroke within 24 hours and had either extensive damage on their CAT scan, defined as something called the ASPECT score, where it's scored from 0 to 10. 10 is a normal scan. You lose points for increasing areas of damage, and so 0 would be a scan showing a very widespread early infarction. We also used CT perfusion, which is a technique that is commonly used at many centers to assess how much territory is core damaged and how much is penumbra at risk but not permanently damaged. And either of those could get patients into the study. And they just had to have a large core greater than 50 milliliters or an aspect score of 3 to 5 to get into the trials. So these were all large strokes. In fact, the average core volume was about 70 cc's, which would be considered quite a large stroke and would have been exclusionary in many of the prior trials. So with those inclusion criteria in mind, these patients were then randomized to get thrombectomy or not. Again, this was a real paradigm shift. We previously didn't really treat any of these patients. So suddenly we are now treating half in the context of this trial. Outcomes were defined as the modified Rankin scale, which is a scale that goes from 0, where patients are completely back to normal with no residual symptoms, to 6, which is death, and 3 is kind of an important defining point where patients with 3 or better can walk, and patients with worse than 3 cannot walk independently. About 352 patients were randomized. Again, half to thrombectomy and half not. They were pretty typical of a stroke population. The median age was about 66, 67. These were very severe strokes. The NIH stroke scale, which is a scale of stroke severity, was 19, indicating quite severe impairments. And the average core volume was about 70 cc's, and they ranged quite substantially. The key result here was that there was a significant improvement in clinical outcomes over the range of the modified Rankin scale. I should probably explain what that is just again for a minute. I mentioned what the scale is, but when we look at outcomes here, you can do this in a couple of ways. You could sort of say, like, I'm only going to look at the number of patients who were 0, 1, or 2, which would be really good outcomes versus all others, or you could look at the full range of scales and look for kind of a shift towards better outcomes. The primary outcome was this shift where any change towards the better was considered a substantial improvement. And using that approach, the benefit of thrombectomy in this population was an effect size of 1.51. So patients were 50% more likely to have a more favorable outcome at 3 months after their stroke. 3 months is a typical time point. Notably, if we dichotomize the score with functional independence or independent ambulation, those were still 2 to 3 times more likely with thrombectomy than with medical care. So this was a huge win and in many ways a surprise. Obviously, some people were hugely enthusiastic about this and thought that we could make a difference. And a lot of people were really skeptical and thought that we couldn't based on what our prior notions were. So this was really very compelling data to show us that we could lead to better outcomes. It's worth pointing out that we really didn't change mortality in a significant way. That wasn't the primary goal. And these severe strokes, many patients consider severe disability a fate even worse than death. But we didn't change mortality. Very few patients with these large strokes ended up with a modified Rankin score of 0 or 1, meaning that they were back to doing everything they were doing before. Again, not surprising, they all had substantial damage. But there was a huge improvement in the number of people who were still functionally independent or at least ambulatory compared to before, and that is just an enormous boon for these patients. Some important secondary outcomes were quality of life scores, which also were better in the treated patients in terms of mobility, social activity, cognition, and less depression. So all those also supported the primary result that thrombectomy leads to better outcomes. So in terms of safety, our big concern was that these patients with large strokes might have an increased risk of intracranial hemorrhage because we've just opened an artery in a big area of injured tissue. And it turns out that that wasn't the case at all. The risk of clinical worsening due to intracranial hemorrhage or a symptomatic intracranial hemorrhage was only 1 out of 178 patients in the thrombectomy arm and 2 out of 174 in the medical care arm. So really no significant difference at all. It looks like there was maybe a little bit of early neurologic worsening in the thrombectomy patients, but they had better outcomes in the long run. And that's an interesting result that we are still exploring. Why did they get worse early but then do better in the long run? Maybe they had more swelling. When we do a thrombectomy procedure, sometimes you move the big clot from a big artery, but it sort of breaks up and lands in another. So we're still exploring that. What we really care about are these long-run improvements or long-run outcomes. So this is sort of a secondary result, but it is noteworthy and requires further exploration. Other complications were quite low. So overall, this trial was atom-smashing. It took the paradigm of what we could and couldn't treat and just cracked it wide open and said, now we can treat these patients with large strokes, and this potentially increases the proportion of strokes who can get thrombectomy from, again, 15-ish percent to maybe 25 or more. It opens up big questions about how late can we treat patients, because maybe if we can treat people with this much damage, then maybe we can treat them even far out beyond 24 hours. That still needs to be further established, but is tantalizing. And these results also importantly jived with the results from a large Chinese trial that came out at the same time and a Japanese trial from earlier that suggested similar results. So adding to a global picture of our ability to treat these large strokes.
Absolutely amazing, Dr. Kasner. This is such an interesting study as we're talking about the expansion for more patients, more strokes that you can care for. What are the expectations for those patients who fit into this expanded category?
I think a lot of patients would have fit this category previously, would have ended up in the situation where they went to a local hospital, saw their stroke team, or maybe used telemedicine, telestroke to see them, and they would have said, sorry, it's too late, there's nothing for us to do. And now the expectation should be, you know, strong consideration for thrombectomy in this patient population. There are still some caveats. While we took large strokes, there's large and then there's giant. The people with really giant strokes, we need to look at this a little bit more, but they maybe benefit less. That wouldn't be surprising. Is it still worth a shot? Maybe. So those are some of the clinical considerations. But most importantly, we really just cast this much wider net for patients who we could potentially treat.
And as patient selection was really the cornerstone of this study, that's what makes it so interesting. Are there changes, before we wrap up here, are there changes that EMS and emergency care providers should be making to their initial contact with patients? We know that time is that factor and that EMS has the ability to start the process. What would you like them to know?
Yeah, this is a really important point. So in most places in our region, actually most places in the country, there's a mandate on EMS, not everywhere, but many places, to take patients who have what looks like a large vessel occlusion stroke, so sudden hemiparesis, sudden weakness on one side, sudden other major deficits, and take them to a comprehensive stroke center if they're known to be within 6 hours or 8 hours or 12 hours, depending on various EMS practice. Now, our time window and severity, a lot of those things become less selective, right? The irony of the name Select 2 is that it lets us be less selective in treatment. We can open up the doors even wider. And so the EMS community should know that these options exist and they should be bringing patients to comprehensive stroke centers or thrombectomy-capable stroke centers whenever the deficit is severe and not try to second-guess this out in the field because it's just impossible.
Great points that you made, Dr. Kasner. Wrap it up for us. What would you like other providers to know about the SELECT 2 thrombectomy study and really how important this is for the future of stroke patients?
I think this tells us a lot about what's going on in the brains of patients with stroke and that this is still a very dynamic process that we can treat people later, bigger, worse than we thought we could before. This may change even further as our technology and imaging and other things improve. But for now, we should not write anybody off, and we should really be exploring aggressive therapy more for a much broader population of patients.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kasner, for joining us and sharing the study with us. That was absolutely fascinating. To refer your patient to Dr. Kasner at Penn Medicine, please call our 24/7 provider-only line at 877-937-PENN. Or you can submit your referral via our secure online referral form by visiting our website at pennmedicine.org/referyourpatient. That concludes this episode from the specialists at Penn Medicine. I'm Melanie Cole.